Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke. I think Byron Saxton should get a one-way ticket to Suplex City after that performance on Raw. Larry Zbyszko should have been driving Rusev's tank given his love for Stalin. And as for the NWO's running, the Iron Sheik at Mania 17 called and said, hurry the fuck up.
I'm G. John Chase, and welcome to the Post-WrestleMania Pop Quiz. Which one of these Mania performers gave me a massive stonking hard-on? A. Stephanie McMahon. B. Ronda Rousey. Or C. Renee Young. The answer is a trick question. It was D. Brock Lesnar.
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke. This week I've received an email from longtime listener Joey Sanchez, who asks, Kieran, seeing as though you challenged Ronda Rousey 2 weeks ago, are you implementing certain gym regime in anticipation of such a super fight? Well, Joey, let me tell you this straight. In my experience, gyms are frequented by insecure men and fat chicks, and I am not one of the above.
This is the panel for the 34th Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about WrestleMania 31 and beyond next. Hello everyone and welcome to the 34th Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke alongside G. John Chase.
Hold on a sec, I go to the gym.
Kieran O'Rourke.
Stand by everything I've ever said.
And conspicuous by his absence today is Carl Jones, who could not be here with us. We are here today to talk about WrestleMania 31 that wrapped up last Sunday, the post-Mania Raw and beyond. It's a very kind of free-flowing discussion this week. We talked a lot about previous WrestleManias in the past, in the previous three podcasts, I should say. And I'm very interested to see what you guys thought on this. We're not going to necessarily go as in-depth on Mania itself, but we're going to talk about the implications of the show, what we saw on Monday Night Raw the following night, and what we're expecting going forward. So again, broad strokes, what do you guys think of WrestleMania 31? There's been a lot of feedback, a lot positive, saying best WrestleMania ever. So I'm kind of curious to see how you think that bit of feedback bounces out in your own heads.
No, man, I enjoyed the show. I mean, are we talking pre-show as well, or...
I guess so.
As a main show, it was a really good show. The main event, the main card itself was pretty stacked. Best Mania ever? I'll tell you, this is a top 10 show.
Yeah.
Maybe, and as a standalone show, I can see it probably being a top 5. On the criteria we went through last week, I'd probably say it wouldn't be a top 5. Although everything was good to very good, nothing really probably... 5-star, 8-standing match-wise. I mean, the main event was fantastic for what it is, given the Lesnar gimmick, and
And it's the closest thing to that kind of a grade on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's Rollins and Orton was as a standard wrestling match was also very good. We'll talk about that in a bit. There's a lot of good stuff on there, but the main event being, it was special. It had a big fight feel by the time that probably really for me personally was when, and probably a lot of people, when Brock re-signed on the next morning, that was like their go home angle for me. I was Mania's on now, kind of thing. And to be fair, from the, not so much from Raw, because their booking from Raw is
shit,
everyone knows, doesn't need repeating again, but we're talking about the WrestleMania Today preview show. I thought they did a real good job on that, and for me personally, that got me up for the whole show. Made the main matches pretty much everything apart from the IC title, which was, I think they played to Benny Hill music.
Yeah, I was going to say, talk about a contrast from last year's monster music video for Daniel Bryan to the Benny Hill Intercontinental title fiasco of a music video that we saw. Actually, to your point, again, the Raw build was so flat after that final go home Raw. It felt like we were missing that feeling. And the WrestleMania Today shows, the two back-to-back that they did, I thought did a fantastic job. And again, to that point of after the post-Royal Rumble Raw, where they had to do that kind of a show, where they boxed them into that studio and they had to do those promos face-to-face, which probably weren't as scripted as we're used to seeing on Monday Night Raw, it was a completely different format and it completely worked.
Yeah. I thought they did a great job on those shows was making every single match a kind of a concise, logical story, which you don't, from week to week, you just don't get. It's funny, actually, I was talking the other day about even rewatching Lost. And watching and how they write the individual shows reminds me of WWE booking Raw week to week. It's like each separate show needs to have its own hook and drama and mystique and false drama, really, given the big picture. And when you watch it back to back, it's kind of like you're banging your head against the wall, so you're just wasting my time with this false drama. And I think they tend to do WWE do a similar thing with Raw, where they get lost in their own bullshit sometimes, I think.
Oh, okay, tie that together with the word lost. Lovely.
Thank you. I didn't even mean it, I'm just the natural. They call him the natural.
Natural!
Back to the WrestleMania today show. I thought they did a really good, concise job of telling the stories that need to be told. The guys didn't seem as scripted, they seemed to have bullet points. All the guys, even the guys on the panel.
Even Flair, who veered off kilter a little bit.
Yeah, Flair obviously just didn't get any memo whatsoever. He just kind of, started talking about TNA in all but name. But I mean, I thought it was a great platform for Cole. He kind of showed what he's actually a pro in.
Yeah, but the best stuff Cole's done in a long time.
I mean, as a side anchor, he's like super professional. And, I love Renee Young, and I prefer listening to Renee Young as, calling matches, to be perfectly honest. I mean, whether that's like just a short, sharp burst of Renee's refreshing. But she, in that position as the anchor on that kind of preview show, Cole really stood out as being, slick and professional. I was up for the show by that point, and really every match delivered in its own way. If you probably told me some of the finishes going in, particularly the Sting one, I would have been against it, but the way it was presented as the nostalgia deal, again, we'll come on to this in a bit, didn't have a problem with that. But no, overall, really enjoyed the show. The racer deal was fantastic.
Yeah, that's the biggest deal.
Yeah, and the use of Rami Rock was God again, which probably shouldn't surprise. I think I said maybe a bit of guilt from the fans as well.
After booing him in Philly.
Yeah, absolutely. Two thumbs up for me as an overview. Yeah.
Gee, broad strokes, what do you think, and how do you rate this WrestleMania against the previous ones? And again, the main takeaways for you on the show.
Yeah, what the fuck happened with this show?
It
was supposed to be shit.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, we were all saying
it was supposed to be a shit show.
In fact, if I'm not mistaken, G, not to put your your words in your own mouth here, because you weren't the only person to say it, and you certainly weren't the only person around this table to think it.
Yeah.
But you were saying
bottom 10.
Yeah. Reserve a space in the list for next year in the bottom 10. And
the build was almost, if not worse than last year's. I think at least when we were talking about 30 last time, with 31 the build. I mean, obviously we go off like the worst Rumble ever Rumble match, just hands down now, and it was just NXT was more exciting than Fastlane. It was basically like there was a potential for it to be maybe a middle 10.
Yeah,
like if everyone pulls out a performance out of their ass, it could be a middle 10. But it looked like, because WWE are completely inept these days, and which is what the Royal Rumble proved, is that this was most likely going to be destined to be a bottom 10, if not a bottom 5. I was really that kind of low on it, because it's just, I didn't care. In terms of the build, the only two things that actually excited me, and I think they were probably on the same show, was the Brock Lesnar vignette promo.
Oh, yeah.
Where he turns around and says he's going to fuck Reigns up.
Yeah.
That's how you promote him. It's like, if you don't use Paul Heyman, that's how you use him. It's like, and that's such a great thing where, like, you don't really have that with, like, say, the John Cena's or even the Daniel Bryan's, where you have multiple ways in which to showcase a wrestler.
Well, they do, they just don't do them.
Well, yeah, I guess they don't, but yeah, it's just, but they always leave it too late to kind of put in a music video or whatever like this. While Brock, you can do the music videos, you can do the sit-down interviews, and you've got Paul Heyman as well, who's doing it pretty much 24/7, so that was great. And also just the old nostalgia of Sting helping Orton against the Authority, which was just like booking 101 for Sting, . it's going back to the old days of the NWO.
The Uncensored 97 pay-per-view just slays everybody.
Exactly.
Right?
I marked out seeing that when he was kicking everyone's ass, but never in my wildest did I think that the show was actually going to overproduce almost than what I originally thought, and I think I'm a bit skeptical to probably put it in the top 10 like I was with number 30, because it's like, we'll see how history dictates how this show is remembered. But my feeling is, I think it's a top 10.
Well, here's a very quick question, because do you think this was better than WrestleMania 30?
I think it was, by a match-by-match basis. I think obviously, 30's key drawing point is going to be the Daniel Bryan storyline from the beginning and end, which is almost like a replica of... Well, it is actually a replica of Bret Hart at number 10, so I get that. But as on a match-by-match basis, like the highs, there's a lot more highs, I feel, with 31. And I think also, I had to go to work the next day after watching these shows. And after watching Rumble, I was fucking fuming at work.
Well, this just for a little bit of context to our foreign listeners, this means that you get 3 hours sleep.
Yeah, I get 3 hours sleep before I have to go to work. And so I was fucking fuming after Rumble. I was like, why the hell did I stay up and watch that shit? I should have just went to bed after the title match. And I was just fuming. And kind of like the same with a lot of other shows. This one was, I went to work tired after watching Mania 31, but I was happy all day. I was happy all day as I was thinking about it, and I was going over every single bit of the show, which just brought a smile on my face, and I just thought, that could be a top 10, actually, because I want to watch it again.
When was the last time you had a show that brought you this much joy, G?
Probably One Night Stand.
Wow, that's 10 years ago.
Yeah.
About the Punk Money in the Bank.
And no, I'm not saying that, like, I didn't enjoy that show. I'm saying I enjoyed this more than that one. It just really surprised me. That's just the thing. It just completely, in every way, without going in like the details, all the different aspects of the matches I thought were great. I thought the pre-show I thought was really good. I thought both those matches were pretty well done. Everything ranged from at very least entertaining up to great. And in terms of like when Kieran was talking about like not necessarily where it could be a top five or not, it didn't have that top five match. But saying that main event's a 4.5.
It's
pretty fucking close. Yeah. It's really close. I mean, again, it's how history dictates that. But what you will remember is Suplex City Bitch, right? Him destroying Reigns is just getting destroyed. But Reigns actually does a good job of looking like he's trying to fight back by like smiling, saying like, oh, "I'm gonna take this." Brock just owning, and then just finally after like over 10 years, someone finally cashes in at Mania. It's going to be hard pressed not to remember that.
Oh yeah, it's a very, very, very eventful, yeah. Noteworthy thing. Before we go on to any kind of more individual points, Kieran, compared to WrestleMania 30, thoughts? Better, worse?
No, I'd go better. Yeah, absolutely. I thought this show, and in up until the final week, even including the final Raw, and not include SmackDown if anyone bothered to watch.
Be serious.
No one watches SmackDown.
But then you look at those matches, and we joke all the time, half joke, you know, about they actually book for videos these days.
Yeah.
And when you watch them tell the story of the individual matches, they all did seem important on that WrestleMania Today show. For me at that point, it's like, yeah, when you present them like that, they all seem a big deal, because you can make, you know, Rollins and Orton was a match which, you know, I think we all thought could be a fantastic match, but
they fucked it up.
Why the fuck would we care? Because these guys fight all the time. Orton's already got his heat back on him anyway.
And then some.
And then some, exactly. So why are they even fighting? It was, you know, it's just a match you'd probably see next week on Raw or something. And there's a lot of that. Even like Bray and Taker, you know, what's it going to be? It's kind of thrown together. He's, you know, what kind of shapes Taker in? But it was presented like something special. And I think most of the matches on, pretty much all the matches on the main card came across as, you know, they were special matches by the time in that setting, in front of that crowd, and anticipation, the crowd is up for it. I think they came across the way the company hoped they would when they planned it, but it's not the way they'd led us to, they then set us up for it anyway. So yeah. In terms of 30, yeah, I'd say absolutely better. As an overall show, absolutely, yeah, it felt like a real special. I think in terms of being a special big show, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're definitely top five in that respect. The comparison and the yardstick is X7. Match quality is not up there of X7, but in terms of feeling like a damn special show, yeah, it's right up there. And in some ways, maybe more special. I think maybe in terms of the look at the parts and the value they got out of the parts on the day. Yeah, I could see the argument. I mean, I'd always go X7. That's not an argument in my mind, really. But no, it's still a great show. So better than last year, though.
Just to kind of add this in, I don't know whether we want to add this in now or maybe later. I don't really know where to fit it, but I'll say it now while I remember it. I think the interesting thing about this show, and just how good it is, people who maybe don't usually watch wrestling are like talking about this. So I don't know whether you guys have seen this or not, but like IGN have done a special, like on the little videos that they do, they've done a special review on WrestleMania 31. But suddenly, like, it just seems like a lot of people are talking about this Mania more so than any Mania for quite a while.
Yeah, in terms of fallout after the fact, I'd certainly agree. And I think, you know, it's kind of evidence in the Raw rating the next night, which was the highest since 2012. Yeah. You know, 5.35 million viewers. The network's at 1.3 million. Who knows how many of that was buys beforehand and word of mouth buys after the Rousey angle? Who knows? But I'm certainly inclined to agree there was a lot of buzz. We'll talk about the Monday Night Raw afterwards and how long we think that can sustain shortly. But just to kind of, you know, add my thoughts to the debate, I think that 31 as an overall... The thing is, and this is... We came to this a few times in the Ranking the WrestleManias series that you can listen to by subscribing to us on iTunes at Squared Circle Gazette Radio, oh, by the way. If you take it as a standalone show, you rate it very, very differently from if you look at the... whole rather than some of the parts, if that makes any sense, including the build-up and significance. We'll see in 6 weeks if that buzz is still around and how that makes things feel, if the business changes in any kind of discernible way, because with no Brock, with no sign of anything coming from Rousey, again, we'll come to it, but the first half of Raw feeling the way it did compared to the second half of Raw feeling the way it did this past week, I think is a bit of an ominous sign for things to come.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is, personal enjoyment on the night, I thought this one was better. And for now, that's all I'm prepared to say. Thank you very much.
Just one take task, really, saying it was, you know, the duplication of the Bret Hart story and angle. It really wasn't, because the Bret thing, it was consciously setting up Owen to go forward, and he was getting the title shot whether he won or not anyway. With Brian, it was, you know, it was the thrown together too much bullshit. I just, I guess, apart from wrestling twice, I really don't see it as the Bret Hart, as a Bret Hart copy, to be honest. Yeah, I get the similarity, but fundamentally, I don't think it's the same, really.
Well, it did detract for you as a result, I'm guessing.
I know, it didn't make a difference to me.
Okay. Well, yeah, obviously, in the long run, it didn't, because Bret Hart actually, you know, had the title for a while afterwards, you know, but Daniel Bryan, it was just like a colossal flop. It's more in sense and feel, how when I was watching that, I just felt like WrestleMania 10, a little bit like WrestleMania 20 as well. It was just that thing of like almost a tradition now. WrestleMania 40, I'll be expecting the underdog to win as well. That's the tradition, you know.
The hardcore's favorite gets the Duke at the anniversary.
Yeah, it just felt, rather than it being what they wanted, it was something that they kind of begrudgingly gave us. whilst this is kind of like,
this is what they wanted to give us. This was their choice, and they actually connected with the audience for one night at least.
Was it?
Well, this is again. This is actually part of the debate, and we'll get to this now
because we're going to nice segue to the main event.
Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, which I thought was a fantastic match. I absolutely love Brock Lesnar's work since his comeback, and he just seems to be getting better and better, which is terrifying.
Right, the best fucking thing they've got.
Oh, by miles,
by
and
a
miles.
Country mile.
He's glorious. So here we go. Let's talk about an interesting element here. You mentioned there, Kieran, about how you think that there's a bit of a... Did they give the audience what they want? This is a strange thing where last year we had the happy, sentimental Daniel Bryan, the babyface goes over, conquers the world.
Yeah.
Here we've got the guy that's been pushed as the biggest heel on television every week for the last year winning, and the place is going crazy. Like, this is like a hallmark moment.
Before I go into the comparison of what I think Rollins winning the title meant... There's this weird thing, like, before Brock kind of re-signed with them, I think I told Kieran this before we were watching the show, but it was just like, I was one of those guys that had my head in my hands just thinking, babyface Reigns, this isn't going to work.
No, everybody was.
They're not going to turn Reigns heel, even though we all like to think of that little kind of, like, booking idea, like, oh, I could have gone full Heyman. That was never going to happen. So
as I say, though, as soon as Lesnar resigns, that story's off the table.
Cause
why the fuck would Heyman leave him?
Yeah,
and unless Heyman said he didn't give me a signing bonus or some bullshit. What?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Without the incentive of Brock's going to leave me here, selfishly.
Heyman, that story is...
Absolutely. Primary thought was Brock's got to retain, because you just built the guy for a year, and before you were going to like job him out, but now you've got to keep him. So he's got to keep the belt. That's the obvious thing. In terms of like Rollins actually turning out in the end to be cashing in, this has a feel, I don't know whether you could call this a detriment to it or not, this has a feel similar to 2000, Mania 2000, from when I watched it, as in, I wanted Brock to win. But instead, they gave me a heel in Triple H and Rollins. And so you should be pissed off because you wanted your favourite guy to win. But in the kind of, whether you thought of it of the short term or the long term, they actually kind of made the right move, you know, because, you know, they needed, at that time, they needed to push Triple H, they needed to do more things to make you buy Triple H as a main eventer before he eventually lost to Rock. And I think this is kind of like the similar thing maybe with Rollins. It's like Rollins kind of needed something like this, because whilst Rollins was being pushed as the number one heel in the company because Brock was away, it's still...
He's number one by default.
He was number one by default, and it still didn't feel like he was number one. Okay, it doesn't feel like he was Triple H in 2000. Like, he's fucking number one right now. He just felt like he's just a top heel at the moment.
Yeah,
but with something like this, because I said there's no one that's cashed in at Mania yet, this is something that's, you know, you've underlined that on him now. That's something that makes him stand out. And it just kind of feels that it might have that little kind of 2000 feel to it, where it might not necessarily be the result we wanted, but it might actually be the one that benefits us the most.
Going into this, when Brock had re-signed after going over finishes, I had the feeling he was going to cash in and make it three-way, and then it would be...
Yeah, you actually said it ahead of time.
Yeah, I thought he would cash in, make it three-way, and I thought if they're going to keep it on Brock now, Brock's just going to pin Seth, and they're not going to do Reigns because there's nothing there to turn him on. Without, you know, the Heyman storyline is fantastic for him if the circumstances were right, which was no longer right. So yeah, I'm looking, you know, going and thinking from a personal Mark 8 point of view, I wanted Brock to retain. But, you know, driving home after the show, I'm thinking about it, and yeah, Brock is super beloved now, but I firmly believe he's gone till SummerSlam and he's the champion. People sour on him by then.
You think so?
I do, absolutely.
Who's that?
If Lesnar retained,
yeah,
and all things being equal from last year, i.e. his deal, he's not going to be there again until SummerSlam. What's that, 5-6 months?
Yeah.
Without a champion, people would not take to it. And I think that would be as damaging as him losing anyway. So this way, I think he comes back as strong as he is now. They kept him strong in the booking. My worry is that they're still going to go to Reigns within the next 2 months anyway. And I kind of... Well, two fears. One is they continue booking Rollins as a jobber on TV who happens to be the champ. Basically, he's an IC champ.
Yeah, and I'm worried about that too, especially because they're painting him in the colours of undeserving champion already. And I don't know if it's going to be a thing where he's ultimate chicken shit, just runs away and lets those up-and-coming superstars, Big Show and Kane, take the fall anytime he needs to or whatever. This seems like the right way to go on paper. You've got the most matches now coming out of WrestleMania that you have for any other option that you could have gone with. Let's talk about Roman Reigns briefly here, because Roman Reigns is in the title. I don't know if you've seen this, but since we're doing this on Wednesday, we're taping this on Wednesday, the SmackDown results obviously came out Wednesday morning. The top two matches for Extreme Rules, obviously Seth Rollins, Randy Orton, John Cena, Rusev.
Makes sense.
Rematches from WrestleMania both make sense. Roman Reigns left holding his dick in his hand. I'm guessing he's probably going to get the Big Show or Kane or one of these guys. It just screams of Lex Luger and the Lex Express and, you know, feud with Ludwig Borger in the fall of 93. You may not care, but this is the guy they're going to put stock in. He's going to be around for a while, so they don't need him cold regardless. And it's a worrying thing.
The Luger thing is what we said this before. We were talking about this before Raw. It's all well and good. There's two ways to go. When you build a story, the Lex Express and the Yoko match SummerSlam is a perfect example.
This is worse because Reigns actually did the job here.
Yeah, but I was going to put that point. Luger needed to win at that point. There was no coming back for him. There's no delay in that. That was the peak. Anything they ever had out of Luger, that was going to be it right there. And when you let down from that, the apex of that babyface promise, then yeah, he's a fucking douche. With Reigns, it's a different situation because they've delayed it because he wasn't perceived by a lot of people as ready anyway, so you might not have the complete Luger effect of it's a guy who stalled when it was his big moment.
So this didn't feel like his big moment going in.
No, absolutely, yeah. So it's not the same thing. However, the point is, if they can change their mind up until Brock re-signing, everything's going in their favour to do it. Obviously, the fans' reaction is the one big asterisk on that. When and how are they going to get him in a position as a face to do this again? I just see him floundering with shit feuds, as you say. I mean, and the worst thing is absolute death if he's, you know, there's no engaging heel that is actually going to, I suppose, Rusev, but whether they go to that now, I just see him, how's he going to get momentum?
It didn't work with the Rumble, with the Rock.
Yeah, so I mean, in all honesty, maybe he does flounder for a year, nothing gets going, and then it's like, oh fuck it, let's turn him anyway, and maybe then he can rebuild himself and get a bit of momentum. I still think that will happen with him. I think he won't go up a level until he goes heel, I think, and gets to work that side as a solo. But my gut tells me he will take the belt within 2 months.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
I always thought Brock, the babyface turn for Brock was on the cards, I think, always. And so I'm not fully behind the fact that I think it would have backlashed against him if he kept the title. I mean, if anything, I thought the rest of the results on the show, you know, Brian and Cena winning the other titles, I thought was almost giving us like the clue that Brock was going to retain, because it was like, you know, they're giving the next two titles to their two most popular guys, well, one popular guy, and you know, it's just like, you know, they're obviously going to be carrying these belts on the main shows while Brock's away, but like, now it's gone to Rollins, now it feels a little bit weirder, where it's kind of like now the two popular baby faces have got the lower belts. It's just like,
it should have done it earlier.
It has the similar feeling to when Punk first won the world title, you know, where like where he won the championship belt but he wasn't the main guy, and like instead they concentrated on Cena, or they concentrated on other belts and so on, like the other WWE title and so on. It has that feeling where Rollins might, yeah, it might, where John Cena and his US title might take precedence over.
I think you would hope committing to that, because even with Punk, they never committed full bore to the fact that Rollins, main event of WrestleMania, this is the guy going forward.
Yeah.
You would certainly hope that he's not going to get that treatment.
See, yeah, but that statement straight away, we saw last year they will do at any given time the move they probably think is the right move. Doesn't necessarily mean, okay, Rollins wins the main event and he's the guy now. In their eyes, oh, that's him made now, so now he can job.
Yeah, and that's what I'm afraid of, because he's not one of those guys, unless they have, and you know, there were many differences between the Triple H Seth Rollins comparison that you made, you know, obviously the reactions of the live crowd and what people actually seem to want at the time. But are they going to commit to Seth Rollins the way they did to Triple H, especially with Hunter still lingering over here? And pretty much, regardless of what anybody wants to say, even though he wasn't on Raw, taking the position of the most important heel in the company.
I think the one thing that's in the favour of Rollins and this title is, I think he is actually going to keep it at least till SummerSlam.
So you're thinking a little bit longer.
A little bit longer, just because I'm thinking that the basic angle that they were doing on Raw, right, not to go too far ahead, but the angle that they're doing on Raw was Brock was pissed at Rollins. He didn't give two flying shits about Reigns. They barely mentioned Reigns. All Paul Heyman turned around and said is like, well done, kid. You kept him there for a while. And that was it. They didn't mention Reigns again.
Oh, no, it's all that
fury was on Rollins because he's the guy with the title. So it seems to me, if Rollins loses the title and Reigns gets it back, yeah, okay, a Brock Lesnar rematch would be exciting at SummerSlam. But that's not the story they were telling on Raw. It's Brock's pissed off with Rollins. Stephanie has suspended him and has said, I will decide when he gets his title shot. You know, so it's all kind of building, like it's going to be
Lesnar-Rollins.
It's going to be Lesnar-Rollins at SummerSlam. Maybe a triple threat and add Reigns in there. I don't know. But it seems like that's more the storyline more than anything else. Like, they're going to do Reigns and Rollins in the meantime, and I think they're going to try and hope, because Rollins is a good heel, that will turn Reigns babyface, you know what I mean? Like he'll get the crowd behind him again. But yeah, you're right. It absolutely won't. I'm a broken record on this, but sorry, Rollins has developed since the Shield. He's the champion, right? And you can see like a different look, different character, everything. Dean Ambrose, to a slightly lesser success, has changed as well. But Reigns is just fucking stuck.
He's like clinging to
the needle
glory
on the record is just stuck, and he's still wearing the same gear. He still has the same fucking entrance, which I don't buy into anymore. You know, in the music and so on, I said I won't buy into Reigns until I say who Reigns is post Shield, and we still haven't seen that yet.
Yeah,
we've seen little glimpses of it, but it's just, and I don't know whether it's necessarily Heelton. Heelton's a very easy way of doing that, because it means you've got the freedom to really explore what you want your character to be.
When you mentioned there about how you think it's, you know, Rollins, Lesnar at SummerSlam, and it's going to be Rollins, Reigns in the meantime, that's surely another failure for Roman Reigns trying to, you know.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, for me, no way, Lesnar, I don't see Lesnar one-on-one with Seth at SummerSlam. Triple threat, yeah, and Reigns takes it. If not, it'll be Reigns, Rollins. I think I don't see the point of, and they won't job. We shouldn't do. Rollins shouldn't beat Brock. It'd be great for him, but I just think in terms of value for that company, how they're going to use him, I don't see it. I see I can see Reigns winning it at SummerSlam, and that's his moment because it's still SummerSlam. And if you want Lesnar on the card, make it Triple Threat, and then maybe Mania do one on one. Do they go back to Reigns and Reigns as champion? Lesnar wins the Rumble, maybe.
I like the idea of Lesnar in the Rumble.
Well, what's I just think if you're doing Rock and Triple H next year, so it's not Rock and Brock. What's Lesnar's match? I don't really marquee match. He's probably going to be probably for the title.
Yeah,
I guess so. So yeah, I see. I mean, Brock winning at SummerSlam, for me, it's exactly the same thing. What, he's going to win in August and then disappear till January.
So if anyone just gets fucked again, and if this one title match, the authority doesn't want him to get another because you can't trust this guy, and then he has to enter himself to the Rumble and win the whole thing.
It tells itself, that does, yeah.
Yep. On that note, in terms of like, discussing these different ideas, though, is this the peril of doing such an incredible job for the last 12 months of making Brock Lesnar seem like the king of the world, only for him to not be around very much? It's like the biggest star in the company, the guy that everybody wants to see, is the guy that they can't see, and that's obviously that's good in one respect from being a special attraction. It's also bad in the sense of, again, the whole thing of what you said earlier, it feels like the world champion isn't as big a deal as the guy that they've established as being a star for the last 10 years.
This is why some of the other results confused me. I didn't initially agree with the Orton Seth Rollins at first, but then it kind of made sense when Rollins actually won the titles. It's like, you know, you're creating your next, you know, contender. So I'm okay with that now. Sting Triple H, I was confused by completely, because I thought I was absolutely dead certain Sting was going to win. It's like, you know, throw the dog a bone a bit, you know, give him something. But, you know, at the end of the day, both of them are part-timers. It doesn't really change the business which one of them wins. It's just down to personal preference, so it's just my personal preference. I think Sting should have won, because I'm a fan of his. But the main two was Undertaker and Cena,
okay,
winning their matches. You know, Brock's now like Brock's the number one babyface now, quite frankly. He's higher than Reigns, and he's higher than Cena and Daniel Bryan.
And that's the point. Just when they did the big babyface turn, he's fucked off for 6 months.
And it's just a thing of like. This is why I really thought, like, they had all the kind of makings of, like, Brock retaining the title as a babyface, and it's like they're now going to give him a steady stream of heels to try and challenge him. It's that old, like, 80s mentality of, you know, you feed the heels to him. But the great thing of this, because Brock isn't overused, it's you have time to build these heels up. So you could do, you know, you could have Rollins, you could have a heel Reigns, you know,
you could build up Rusev,
you could build up Bray, and they would all be viable challengers for Brock, and they all would have had great matches and so on, which is why I was confused by. I can understand why they did it for the nostalgia of Undertaker, and obviously the Undertaker match, it was a bit of a, you're fucked either way, because you're kind of like, if Undertaker wins, it kind of screws Bray over again, and I'll be honest with you, I don't see Bray coming back from this.
Bray was dead anyway.
Yeah, or if you have Bray win, then it kind of takes away from the achievement that Brock did the year before by having, like, oh, someone else has managed to beat him now. So it's kind of two-ended sword on that one. But the Cena one, I can understand why they've done it, but it's just like, it's, man, you got an act that's getting over, and is good, it's great. In terms of my eyes, it's second after Brock in terms of my favorite act in the company.
Is it because of the tank?
The tank was the cherry on the cake. That entrance was one of my highlights of the show. It was just fantastic. The Rocky IV entrance with the fucking goose stepping soldiers holding the flag, Lana all white because she's pure, you know, holding the title, just all walking like a queen, and he just comes out on the fucking tank. It was brilliant. Even before that great entrance, I was completely into that act, and it was my second favorite after Brock, because it was again another guy who's kicking everybody's asses and rubbing their face in it. It's just a different way. Brock's doing it as a cocky heel. Rusev's doing it as this foreign, you know, hitting into their xenophobia. And now it's just like all in like one fell swoop. You got this great act, and then right after Mania, no undefeated streak, no title belt, no Lana. He's lost everything that he's got. Like all the little gubbins. I mean, he's still like a good wrestler, and he's still good in himself. But all the little, like, all of the sprinkles and the cherry on top and
all
the little
booking.
Sparkler and all that stuff, all the booking is now gone, and I'm fucking worried for Rusev, which is a real shame, because I was probably more into Rusev leading up to Mania than I was into Bray the year before. I was really buying into this gimmick, and I just feel now he's been left hung out to dry, like all I've seen as opponents in the past. you know, and it's just like, I don't know where they're going to go with this.
It's worrying. We'll get to, yeah, Kieran, I want to get your thoughts on this too, but the idea of, because we're all about comparisons on this episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio, but the blueprint for Rusev's push very much looks like Umaga in full retrospect, where undefeated, going to beat everybody, smash everybody for a year until it comes time to get to Cena, in which case USA wins. We mentioned before about how the true test of Rusev is going to be when it's time for him to lose, because he's been, you're into the gimmick because it's being treated like a credible gimmick. There always comes a point where the heel has to lose, and on this show it was built up in such a way where I think pretty much Cena had to win. He'd done the job before, it made Rusev look good. I think that it's, I don't want to say this was the right decision, because I think they need heels too, but given they were going with a heel at the top, what do you think? I mean, they need to keep Cena strong.
I have no problem with Cena winning the match, to be honest. I think, given the story, you know, the nationalistic element to it, that he'd lost previously, it's Mania, face going to win. I no problem with it whatsoever. And if Rusev can't come back, it's because they don't book him coming out of it, not because this has done damage to him. In a perfect world, I would love to see like a Rusev Lesnar match where he's undefeated. And, I'm not sure if like Lesnar
they're saying smiling Brock, well, like, red, white, and blue.
Yeah, nice. Maybe he'd have Luger's pants as well. Who knows? That'd be nice.
It'd been great if Lesnar said, I don't give a shit about what you think about this country, I just want to beat your ass. That'd been great.
Yeah, exactly. No, but in terms of that one match, I mean, maybe it's because I expect it. No, not even because I expected it. I think it was, I have no problem with that finish. Brian Taker slightly offended me.
Yeah, you were calling for Bray to win live.
He needed to win. I mean, yeah, that's what I mean. I think Rusev didn't need to win. I think Rusev came out of it looking strong with the entrance and everything, and the presentation and the importance that match seemed to have on that day.
And also, just for it to go into the Bray point, I think that a loss is perfectly fine as long as the loss is given significance, given the fact that they played it up like it was a big deal the next night, and maybe not as big as they could have, don't get me wrong, but he came out and crushed the guy and he's pissed off and he wants things to be better. He's got the rematch with Cena next month, which is also the real question. If he gets beaten again, what do you think about that?
It's terrible if he does. If he's not going to win, I wouldn't even do the match again. I'd say, fuck this, I'm going for the world title.
Well, this is the thing. What's the ceiling on Rusev, realistically speaking, with this gimmick?
Well, this thing, I think that's what I mean. This is why timing is everything. And I think this is the payoff. I mean, if it was a world title match, you say that this is the payoff, and then the only way is down. But at least now you can, you know, he's got the world title, so in theory he can move up to. Is it doing the same gimmick, the same build again? Maybe, but maybe I think that'd be okay. I mean, just in this circumstance, I really don't have a problem with the Rusev thing. Going on to the Bray thing, as you say, Bray, what's the long-term upside of Taker? I guess you get one match next year. Is that going to draw anything? Probably not.
Well, I mean, and this is the thing. I'm guessing if they believe that Taker's retirement will add people coming to the show because they feel it's something special. Because again, even though Taker has, you know, that streak had so much importance, you know, a good friend of ours who'd mentioned that without the Undertaker streak, what's WrestleMania going to be next year after Taker lost? Yeah,
better.
Yeah, as it turns out. And it's interesting though, because that dynamic of what we said there, all that built up equity that Taker has that went with the streak, I think is still intact for one final retirement match. So I think that there is value there, and I think losing to Bray would have damaged that slightly, because it would have felt like, now he's the feral old dog who just can't.
Well, yeah, I mean, as soon as the
he's clinging.
Yeah, as soon as the build is, you're a shadow of your former self kind of thing. Yeah, he's going
to
win.
He has to prove. He has to prove it otherwise.
But I mean, just in terms of, you know, I do have stock in Bray. I have more stock. I've always had, I think, more stock than you have in Bray.
I like Bray. It's just the fact, like you said, and like I've said in the past, Bray's a guy that I think you constantly need to cater to.
Yeah,
you have to feed this monster.
Yeah, the Lex Express reference before for faces. I think the build to Cena when he's talking about changing the universe and stuff, and then it's just just some matches and he loses. That's for me was his Lex Express moment. Really hard to come back from that, because you've shown the character to be kind of phony and just a character and just saying things. There is no mystique to what he says. He just says despite stuff now.
And I've talked about this before, but it doesn't help that they don't actually book him to do anything that's out of the ordinary. You know, he doesn't actually commit any kind of heinous acts. He doesn't do anything that, you know, we've seen, you know, whether it's... You know, this character lends itself to such great creativity, potentially, in terms of the things that he can do to other people to mess with their heads, and these long, elaborate mind games that you could do, that, you know, and they just don't even come close to broaching that.
So my point being, why even do it? I just don't see
the match?
Yeah, why even do this? Why, it could have been anyone for Taker, really, given the build. Why sacrifice? I mean, Bray's not, yeah, as you say, two in a row, it's going to be a tough comeback, and he's never going to, you know, it's, that ceiling is lowering year on year for him. I just, why even have me in this match?
I guess just, what's next for him?
Yeah, exactly. God knows.
So you're going to try and build him some credible threat?
Maybe, yeah, probably, could, maybe, if, I could see Roman, maybe. And Roman gets to beat him. So yeah, that was the one that annoyed me more. Why even do the match? The Sting one you said, yeah, going in, absolutely, it's like Sting's going to win, surely. It doesn't matter. Does it matter either way? As it turned out, it absolutely mattered, because if Triple H has got Rock, then Triple H shouldn't lose. But more than that, before they even went to that segment, the way they booked the match into the nostalgia piece that it came.
That was weird. I kind of want to ask about that, what you guys think, because live... I know, I was on the edge of my seat, like, this is just a complete, you know, this is like, you throw all kind of objectionable thought about wrestling out the way, it's like, ah, fuck it, I'll just enjoy this for what it is, because I, you know, ah, look at all these run-ins, ah, Shawn Michaels, this is great. Yeah. It was crazy, it's a complete spectacle, it's the obvious word to describe. This is a complete standalone match, there's no point grading this on any kind of preconceived criteria. But there's a lot of people that didn't like this match very much, including our own resident Carl Jones, who isn't here today.
It was smoke and mirrors, but it was fun, and it didn't make any sense. Why the fuck would the NWO help Sting, but whatever.
Handshake at the end.
They're all like Triple H's mates anyway, aren't they? It was it's Nash.
Yeah.
It's Nash and Hall.
Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Going against two of them. It's like, yeah, so it's sort of boys having fun. So I can completely understand why some people wouldn't like it. I think, but when you've got... What are you going to do? Sting can do more than, you know, most guys, obviously, in his similar position. But I say he might have Taker and a complete disparate match next year, maybe. What it turned into, it was fun, and it didn't really matter. Sting losing the balance, it was fine. It just, whatever, who cares? And by the time the Rock and Racy segment goes down, yeah, it's not, Triple H should have won.
Having said that, given that Sting was the big outside attraction that was, you know, uniquely different this year...
Was he, though?
Well, this is the thing. I'm kind of debating this, because there's a lot of people who are very keen, because it's the whole fantasy of Sting in the WWE. We want to see, even if it's just one time, we want to see our Sting match, we want to see him do his thing. Standalone entertainment, I absolutely loved it, so I'm not one of the people that subscribe to this theory. It's just the thing of... And we get a lot of this. What was built up was completely different to what was delivered on the night.
They were initially building up that this was going to be the big thing. I thought this was going to be the penultimate match. And then in the end, it turned out to be like something that was lower down in the card that was more fun than anything. And so they decided that they weren't going to put all the emphasis on two part-time old-timers instead, and put more of the emphasis on the people who are actually working the shows. You know, the Rusevs and the Cenas and the Brays and the Rollins and Reigns and so on. So I'm not really against that mentality, actually, that they dropped it down on the card. I was surprised, but once the match kind of got started, I kind of got what they were doing, really. And it was just like, NWO, you know, slowly walks down to the ring.
Yeah, run in would be a very generous term.
Scott Hall does a fucking bump after hip replacement and shit, whatever. You know, it's just like, it's just like, everybody liked it. Just be honest.
No, honestly,
you know, just be honest.
Going through some of the boards that we frequently post these shows on, I know there were a lot of people that did enjoy it, don't get me wrong. Yeah. More than a decently sized minority that thought this was just so far away from what was built up in terms of a grudge match, and all of a sudden you got fucking the NWO signing with their mortal enemy Sting, stuff like that.
What did they think the end goal was going to be of the feud?
Just, again, whether it's an isolated match, which is like Sting, Triple H, you get all the authority goofy running, Sting overcomes, prevails, Sting gets his nice moment. Yeah.
It was always going to end up being a WCW. WWE thing, which is why the NWO DX thing did make sense,
because it was the two
factions, and we never saw the two factions face off against each other, so it was just a nice little fun nod. NWO and Sting are gonna shake hands, because, you know, it's all water under the bridge.
It's
all old, for fuck's sake.
Veterans reunion.
Yeah,
you know, you bring the Nazis and the Allied powers out.
Too old to hold a grudge. Just shake hands. All
I can't
agree.
Remember what it was. I can't remember what I was angry about, goddammit.
Yeah.
Brother. No, I completely understand why people wouldn't like it if you probably invested too much in it, but the fact that Sting maybe cut half a promo one week about why he actually wanted Triple H. I mean, the story was never told that, it's half told that, you know, WCW got fucked up by management, so he's not going to let the same happen to another company. But it wasn't emphasised.
And poor Sting, who did one promo,
fucking promo,
tried to say it wasn't about WCW.
And then when it all goes down, it's you know, the old boys having fun together kind of thing. Apart from Sting, is kind of a bit bemused, like looking a bit pissed off, like, what the fuck are they ruining my moment?
Yeah, exactly. In the end, he just kind of concedes, gives up once and for all. It's like, all right, well, fuck it.
Yeah. But people probably aren't going to say cater to Sting, because Sting's in pretty good shape. But he did cater to him a lot. I mean, he wasn't super mobile. I mean, he's an in shape, pretty old guy. But
yeah, he's pretty good.
I think for me personally, I mean, the whole the feud never kicked off because they never again emphasised why he was there. He was just there. They'd signed him, and he was there. Great. He was brought in as a one-off attraction. Who they may or may not. They don't even know if they're going to use again, so they just wasn't a real big problem. At the end of the day, it was fine.
I think Sting had a good performance considering, you know, the age and time away, because it has been like 14 years since he wrestled. There was a wink there.
No, that's not true, Michael Cole. He's been down there wrestling almost every other week. Yeah. You were there, Booker.
Yeah,
I reckon he's like thinking to himself, was that real? Has he wrestled? Did I wrestle in TNA?
Did he just get drunk one
night? Is there a TNA? And,
yeah, it was just. It does sound like it's from the imagination of Ric Flair, doesn't it? TNA. You know, he no sells the knee, like classic Sting. He does the Sting the Splash, does the Scorpion Death Drop, does the Scorpion Death Lock, boom. You know, I got what I wanted.
And die from the top to the floor.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, you know, okay, he didn't win, but like, and then similar to the Orton. Seth result, you know, it became clear why Triple H won, because obviously they're looking for like another angle later on. But I mean, the other two were still confusing. I'm never gonna buy the fact that Cena needed to win that match.
I don't say he needed to win.
He didn't need
it
at all. Not even to turn around and say, like, oh, just keep Cena just in there a little bit. It's like, no. Cena could have lost that match. He could have lost that match the same way he lost to Brock in SummerSlam. And guess what? He could have challenged the title next day and people still would have bought it because it's just John Cena.
What does Rusev do if he beats Cena?
Just carry on, dominate. It's just carry on, dominate until he eventually moves towards the
world
title.
Would he then just flatten out anyway if he's got nowhere to go but up? If he's got no more upward mobility with the belt... Mm. Is it better for him? I'm not saying it's better to lose, but in terms of progression, if he just beats Cena, what does he do then? Because you've got to heal world champion, so he can't, there's only a limit of what you can do there.
Yeah, his whole act as the US champ's kind of plateaued.
How long can you go this nationalistic thing? You
know? Think about how hot it was when he did the stuff with Swagger the first time.
Yeah.
And some people are like, oh, what does this mean for Swagger? Absolutely fucking nothing. Come on, wake up. But like Big Show and Henry as well, it was like super hot. As an angle, it was hotter then. And it plateaued with Cena because they didn't want to go the USA route, which is, I guess, holding off for Mania, but then he didn't wear a fucking new t-shirt that night anyway. Given the story, given the Rusev story, I think it was the right time. If he's going to lose, it's the right time for him to lose. But then I'd move him on.
Quite frankly, with Bray, Bray's fucked.
Yeah,
he's done.
Flat out.
Yeah.
What if he turns babyface?
Done.
With no momentum.
No, he's done. The only thing that might work, and this is like a gut chat, is if they, it's just, and they would never do this, is they just took him off TV.
Well, they already started that.
Yeah. Took him off TV. I mean, for a long time. I'm taking, like, they take him off completely, and it almost sounds like they're pressing the reset button. You take him off TV, you have him put back with the Wyatt family, you put Harper and Rowan together
again,
because quite frankly, those two ain't doing anything.
The division of the Wyatt family has been disastrous.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just put them all back together again, take them off TV for a long time, and then just try and start again and cross your fingers that it will work again.
I don't know if
that's
you can
all
do
I can
that.
Think of, because apart from that, I see no other way. I mean, Harper, I think they can always do something with him on his own, because there's so much potential there. But in terms of Bray, on his own, he's dead. if they take him off TV and they put him back with the Wyatt family, or even do a new Wyatt family and they put new people with him whatsoever, like they put people around him again, because that's what drew us to the character, was this guy was a leader and people followed him, and when he's on his own he just looks like a wanker in the woods. it's just like it's not impressive at all. So it's just like he's fucked unless they just take him off TV completely. It's like they and the thing is, they, it's not Bray's fault.
Oh, right.
Because the person who's to blame is the guy in charge.
Yeah.
You know, it's you're to blame. You had him lose to Cena at Mania, and then you had him lose again at the end of the feud. Done the same with Undertaker. You put him in a nonsense like Money in the Bank. He did nothing in the summer. Then you put,
yeah,
you put him
as,
in,
yeah,
then you put him in
you...
the Ambrose feud, which did nothing for anyone.
And that should have. And that to me, that was the real mark, where it's just like the stamp of this yeah. character in this environment on this TV show with these writers is never going to get past a certain yeah. point. Because you're right, and like you said, Keir, I know that you hated when he's part of the scenery, one guy in the ring amongst mm. many in Money in the Bank last year. The feud with Ambrose was so telling, because like, there is no reason, from the promos to the angles to the matches, that this couldn't be the thing that really lights them both on fire. On paper, it seemed like it should
yeah,
be it so should, good.
It should have been gold.
And it just it flattened them both out. Yeah. And it's like, how does that happen? It's because on this show, they aren't going to do anything discernible, tangible, with Bray Wyatt, where you can sink your teeth yeah. to the sinister guy doing the sinister thing.
Bray and Ambrose would have been a great thing if both of them had been established as main eventers for years.
Didn't even
like years later when Austin and Rock face each other, something like that. But to do the two characters so early on in their development, it's just like, well, one's got to be crazier than the other. So who's jobbing to the other? Whose character isn't as crazy as they're trying to portray?
Even then,
so
from it was, an artistic,
it was never going to work.
Yeah, but even from an artistic standpoint, it underperformed. Like what they could have done with what they've got, whatever.
It's just the entire Bray. Because the thing is, Bray right up until WrestleMania was so stonkingly hot. And then just like right afterwards, as I said, like through the Money in the Bank, through doing literally nothing in the summer, the Ambrose view didn't give a shit at all, and then you know you go to Rumble where they try to do something with him by putting him early on, and he lasts for a while, which had the potential to do something for him, and then he gets fucking, you know, dropped like a fucking turd by Big Show and Kane, isn't it? It's just like Vince McMahon is nowhere near as creative as he wants to fucking let on. This guy has no fucking idea what to do with Bray. This isn't a Mick Foley situation where like after a while he suddenly just twigs and goes, "No, I know what I need to do with him." He does not know what the fuck to do with Bray Wyatt.
Agree in principle, but slightly different perspective. My problem is they have, I think their uses of Bray is exactly what, in their mind, what they want from it. There's no substance to the character. You come out, he cuts a few, delivers a few nice promos that don't actually make sense because they don't actually emphasise what he's talking about or reflect upon what he's talking about, but it'll cut into a nice video. And,
yeah, exactly.
And, okay, you'll do your thing and then you'll eventually lose. For me, it's how they've always used him, and it's how they, maybe it's the value they put him in. Do they even want him any higher than that? Obviously, he's never been around the world.
I don't think they do. If they did, I think that it would have been evidenced by now.
He's just
a guy that we can push for a while before he loses to one of the keys, though. Like key cornerstones.
In fairness, you said you compared Rusev to Umaga. I don't know, I see Bray Wyatt's pretty much being like an Umaga as well. That guy had a glass ceiling on him in terms of his heel capacity within the company.
I don't think Bray did, though. Bray could have been more.
Oh yeah, Bray could have been more, but it's just like, but this is like how the company perceived it, and they believe that there was a glass ceiling on him like there was with Umaga. Bray's just going to be that guy. He's that heel lingering around going, "God, we need a heel to do this." Bray,
you there in the hat.
Bray, you can talk. Just reading different websites and they're just saying like, "Oh, Bray's doing a really good job of promoting this feud on his own without The Undertaker around." He's fucking being forced to. He's got no other goddamn choice. And the thing is, the more promos he did without The Undertaker turning up, the more I was thinking, this guy's fucking jobbing.
Yeah.
He's trying to save himself. He's thinking, like, I'm going to do the job, so I'm going to try and make myself look as good as possible before I go. In no way, shape, or form, where you've got a feud between one guy and another, where only one of them appears to do the promotional work, is that going to be a success? No fucking chance. You need both of them there. And I think it was bad work by WWE not having Undertaker appear in any way, shape, or form. It was just, in terms of the overall show itself, this was the closest thing to a low for me on the show.
Yeah,
was that
I'd agree.
Bray Undertaker match, because it was just like, I didn't buy into it either way, whoever won it. I didn't buy into it either way because it wasn't promoted properly. And just Bray coming out and doing some, you know, promos near a grave or whatever, or looking in the freaking urn, isn't good enough. You know, we've seen the fucking people looking at the urn before and the graves. Yeah, well done. We wanted something different. Why not Undertaker come out and try and sell us on why we should give a shit about him? Don't leave it to his fucking opponent. You last asswipe, so tell me why we should fucking watch you again. You come out and fucking apologise and then convince me why we should care.
The only other thing from WrestleMania that we haven't dived into too much yet is the angle, and I know this is one that you've been in the course talking about, G.
Yeah.
The Rock return and Ronda Rousey being at ringside and being brought in, assuming mixed tag for WrestleMania, but a great segment on the show.
This was my favourite bit of the show. If, like, in, you know, if we're somehow doing this podcast, you know, by the time we get to WrestleMania 40, we're doing the top 40 or whatever, you know, this is going to be the thing that I remember most, along with the main event. We've managed to have Rock now for 5 WrestleManias in a row, in some capacity, and it's just like, we're getting a bit of consistency now from Rock, which I'm glad to see. It's just like, after like 7-8 years away, it's, because Rock is money every single time, whatever he's doing, and I think he should be around, even if it's in future, but probably suspecting he's getting a performance out of, we're going to get a performance out of him for the next Mania, but even in future, if it's just he does that, and turns up for a promo, it's always going to be class, because Rock's are great. You know, he's God. Triple H was like the fucking ball sack of this promo, right? Because Stephanie was controlling everything, and just Triple H was just stood behind her the whole time, and just like with such the look of, I'm the one that's jobbing here. Like, no one else is going
to
job tonight.
He's about to take a hip toss and run around.
I'm going to take a hip toss.
He was the fluffer of the segment.
He was, yeah. Few key points. One, Stephanie McMahon is an amazing heel. It's not like a revelation to me right now, but you know, this whole recent run of her since she's come back, I just really admire her. She is a great effective heel in a way that Vince wasn't.
Okay. I disagree.
No, there's no way. Wait. Vince is a great heel, right? And the greatest heel of all time, right? Vince's heel act, though, relied on pure ham. Right, ham on the bone with cheese sauce on the side, right, drizzled over the top of the ham on the bone, right. But now with her, she isn't quite as ham and cheese as Vince is. She's a lot more kind of subtle and a lot more kind of like, Vince is a great character, but Vince is a very kind of wrestling character, right? It's that kind of like, no one's boss is really like that. That you'd have a boss who's an asshole, but no one's like Vince. Stephanie does resemble a lot of female bosses in the world, and some that I've worked with myself. She's a lot more relatable to current bosses than Vince ever was. And so that's why I think she's such a great heel, because she doesn't rely so much on the ham that Vince did. It's a lot more genuine and realistic. So when you see her and she's being a fucking bitch, she's really, really good at playing that. And I think this was heavily emphasized during this promo, how good she was. But The Rock coming out is always going to be the win, no matter what. And this was just fucking fantastic. And just the back and forth with him and Steph was great. And the slap, it was just all brilliant. And it's just like, and Steph, again, just playing that great heel role, you know, the Hasta La Vista, you know.
Yeah, the wink to Triple H, and she said that was great.
Hasta La Vista, you know, see you later, Dwayne.
Well, we didn't even mention
East Bay Boy.
Stupid the Terminator entrance was, by the way. I hated that.
Yeah, that Terminator was fucking ridiculous.
They didn't even move. Yeah, I know.
I know. That was apparently they were still, like, making it just before he was about to go out. They were still constructing it all together.
Maybe it was the NWO in costume, that's why they didn't move.
It probably was, yeah.
They were moving, it was Continental Drift.
Yeah, absolutely. at this point, because we saw Ronda Rousey earlier in the night, I completely forgot that she was there. You don't see her in shot at all, and you just hear it so slowly in the crowd, just like, Ronda Rousey. And it's just like building, building, building. And Rock's just standing there, and he's just looking around at the crowd, and he just looks slowly to his left, and the camera just zooms out to reveal Ronda Rousey there. And I was generally just thinking we were just going to see Ronda Rousey there laughing. Like she's not part of the show. She just finds it funny that they're actually cheering her name, that they've noticed her. And she's just laughing, going, ha, ha, ha. Like, but no, she's staring at him back. And it's like, oh, shit. Is this a thing? And she's just glaring at him back, and Rock just, like, you know, gestures for her to jump over the ring barrier. And as soon as she does, I'm like, I'm losing my shit. I didn't look like I was. but in my head I was. There's two ways of marking out. There's one way you overact, and there's one way you just you're quiet because you don't want your own reaction to detract from what you're watching. And that's what I do. That's what I was doing. I just scooted my chair forward, and I was just watching this because this was fucking gold to me. And it's just that great thing of just like, she just jumps over the ring barrier. This is fucking gonna happen. And The Rock just like does a slight fist bump to her, and then just kind of gestures like, come with me, and just walks in. It just like, it just makes me laugh every time I see it, and it was just fucking great. Just every moment, just the crowd chanting, you know, Wanda's gonna kill you, and Steph's just looking really uncomfortable. Like, she was doing a Vince McMahon then, when she's kind of doing that uncomfortable, like, all right, guys, yeah, you got me, okay. And it was just fucking great. Like, Wanda just being very simple in her delivery, just saying, you know, any ring I get into is mine anyway, so, you know. And she just says, if you want me gone, make me.
Yeah,
just smiles.
The one thing I gotta say, I'm looking forward to so much, and you were putting over Stephanie there, if they do that match, the training vignettes with Triple H teaching Stephanie is gonna be just fantastic.
It's gonna be absolutely genius. And The Rock and Ronda's training regime would just be fucking hench, you know.
They could do a contrasting video, which would just be brilliant.
It'd just be great.
The most old school, the more old school the build up, the better for this one. The promos that Triple H do on each other should be pretty damn good too.
Yeah.
It's funny though, because you talk about this, but as they're actually doing the angle, Triple H is in the ring, and I remember I had my head in my hands thinking, Rock's coming out now. The direction of the promo, Rock's coming out, it's Rock Triple H on its own. That, to me, there's nothing to that. I don't say nothing, because that's probably, it's The Rock, so there's probably something to it. But it just felt before the Ronda Rousey involvement, I was kind of dreading this direction.
It wouldn't have been main event, it wouldn't have been, you know, like Rock scene or anything like that, but...
Kieran, what do you think about this whole deal?
No, as I said, loved it. Trying to say something that G hasn't said already. the timing of Rock to reveal the... when it goes down... First things first, actually... Love Stephanie, she's a fantastic heel.
She's amazing.
But the positioning of her and Triple H on a weekly basis is massively detrimental for me.
It's horrible.
The whole of the roster is beneath them.
And that was something that Vince was never guilty of. He always used himself and the ham and cheese to put the other guy over.
And but in terms of this segment, I mean, that helped it, because when Steph's there giving all the shit, and, you know, we've seen it on a weekly basis, and she's doing it to Rock, and he's backing off. And we're all thinking, Rock ain't gonna fucking back off. Rock's not gonna do that.
No.
Steve Austin, he's the only one, he'd just stun you. But Rock's gonna do something. And he walked, and just his timing and his mannerisms as he looks around, and his revelation when we got the revelation that Ron's there. And it's like, oh fuck, shit's like this. It's like, well, because we knew she's there with these, but then it's like, why, they're actually gonna use her?
They actually can use it.
So like the reveal and the way Rock revealed that to us was just absolutely beautiful timing. The biggest problem with Stephanie, and lesser extent Triple H, because he will do, but still, is there's no payoff from Stephanie being a heel most days. There is no payoff, and this will be a payoff, but still, it's one payoff in 3 years, whatever.
It's not enough for me.
There's on a week to week basis, Stephanie, as great as she is as a performer, just from a business standpoint, there is no point to what she does, other than that's the character. It just confuses the product they're giving us, because then the rest of the time, Uncle Paul is the founder of NXT, and we're supposed to love him, and Stephanie's there hugging dead kids. So how are we supposed to boo her in real life? In real life, we're supposed to remember that they're both great guys, and they'll take care of us going into the future. That's reality of what they project, and it's completely contradictory to the on-screen heel characters. I hate that. Absolutely despise that. And so all it does is it makes 99% of the roster look inferior to them.
Yeah. And again, it's just that comparison. You never saw Vince do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And hey, at least Vince had matches.
Yeah.
or use guys as surrogates.
Which, obviously, we got that match hopefully to look forward to next year, but this segues naturally into Monday Night Raw, and we won't talk about this too much because a lot of the future stuff has been discussed already in terms of the world title picture. But again, it just kind of reiterates that point from earlier on, the completely separate realities of the first half of Raw to the second half of Raw, not helped by the fact that Byron Saxton was on commentary. Vince McMahon's
fucking awful.
Vince McMahon's favourite chuck ice, as you say, Kieran.
I never said that.
You did. Boren Saxton, as I call him on the night for his terrible performance.
Rene and Corey Graves would have been a better option.
Anybody would have been a better option.
He must have been told to shut the fuck up, though.
It's come out now, obviously, that the second half of the show, the audience was very much potted out in terms of the crowd noise, just due to the chants and whatnot. The main event really just, again, it's like the kind of dour picture for the future, where you've got these guys, it's like, you've got
Ryback.
You've got Seth, who just had this huge moment last night, he's in front of the same audience, and he's seen as a star by these people, by this audience at least. But surrounding him with the five guys they did, even, including Roman Reigns, obviously wasn't going to have a prayer anyway, but like Ryback and Big Show and Kane, it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like we're getting this again now. It's like it's that thing of looking distantly at WrestleMania 32 and hoping, okay, we're gonna get a good Brock match. It's probably take his retirement. Ronda Rousey and The Rock, good stuff. But for the next 11 months before we get to that point, are we looking at another just fucking dank year?
Yep.
Well, that's just fucking, that's a sucks ball.
We'll get a decent SummerSlam.
I think kind of during that show we said this. I think they kind of. The typical post-Mania Raw, because they gave kind of surprises and kind of the smoke and mirrors the night before in a bunch of different ways at different times, it was like they didn't have as much left over to give you. It's like, okay, we'll just give you the Bryan Ziggler match, just throw that out there, a couple of debuts. But in terms of the book, I mean, it was just kind of, by and large, like a regular run-of-the-mill Raw show. It felt like, yeah, we got our stuff out of the way last night, and this is kind of, it was a recovery show rather than like the last two or three years. So I think in makeup of the show, it wasn't maybe what we were like we you know stayed up and watched it live because it's the night after show, expecting big surprise and stuff. I just thought, given just from the tone of the show, what they gave us, it was pretty early. It was a different deal. And so in terms of the main event as well, yeah, I'm willing to be more patient than 1 week. It was a throwaway match. It was like a SmackDown match. Yeah. So I'm willing to give it time, see where it goes. Hold your breath on it being too different from last year.
Well, this is the thing, and this is where, because you mentioned how you were on such a high after WrestleMania 31 was finished. I was too. I was all gung ho. I was so excited for Raw the next night, and then as soon as Raw was finished, I think there was that general feeling amongst us that watched it live together, just like, well, that's that. It's back to Raw, business as usual. I was
pissed off Tuesday.
Yeah, it was a deflating feeling. And it's just that, you know, the network number being 1.3 million, which is good for now, but it's going to drop rapidly in the next couple of months, I'm assuming. I know they're doing a free month to try and offset that a little bit. The Raw rating being through the roof. Again, we'll see where it is next week.
Yeah.
Again, just like, okay, so they're getting no Lesnar, no Rock, no Rousey, which was the big news stories.
Yeah.
It's back to that dynamic now. And unfortunately, yeah, I think that when people saw Seth at WrestleMania, people got that idea that was going to change a little bit, that Seth was going to be treated like the star, and we're going to get something new that we can watch on a week-to-week basis. That's clearly not the case, but I just don't see that meat to bite into, other than shock debuts and stuff like that we saw on Raw.
I mean, let's just, outside of the post-Mania Raw, this is what Raw's like all the time anyway. In terms of the actual post-Mania Raw itself, I think you already kind of hinted at it anyway, they blew their load. Because when you think of the previous, the last three, I'd say, is when the last three post-Mania Raws are the ones significant, when it started becoming a thing. I mean, you know, there's no Brock to debut or to come back. There's no Dolph Ziggler cash-in, because they did that. You know, they did the Rollins cash-in the night before. They did the Ronda Rousey and The Rock return the night before. It's just they blew all their load. Just had this Brock angle, which only ran for an hour. Which I don't know whether I would have been more pissed off if it ran for the whole three, like we had to wait till the end. I don't know, but it's just like the fact that it only ran for an hour was just, and it was the only good thing besides, you know, a debut.
I thought the first hour was very good stuff. It's like you got the great promo with Heyman and Lesnar. You got the anticipation for the match. Yeah, Bryan Ziggler was a good match.
Yeah.
Yeah, the debut of Kalisto kind of exceeded my expectations, considering that I've never really thought too much of them in NXT.
Yeah, Kalisto's good.
Neville.
As a squash match, I thought it was entertaining. Yeah, it was good, right? This is the thing I want to bring up, right? It's this whole thing about like Vince's like hard on that he has for taking away people's first names. It's just I don't get it, and it seems like
kind of fucking name is Adrian?
It is. It's just he's the one that gives him the names. It's just like it just sounds stupid. Like it's just
Neville.
It's just having singular names like they're fucking Madonna or something. It doesn't add mystique. They're not Goldberg. You know, it's just, why are you doing it? It's just so pointless. Why would you do it with Neville as well? It's just like, let's just call him Adrian Neville. It's just, what are they going to do with Sami Zayn? Zayn! That's how they're going to do it. But in you know, in kind of respect to, I'm just going to call myself Chase now.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay,
I'm
well, just there you Chase. Go. In honour of this situation, Kieran, thoughts on this Raw?
More than anything else, it came across, like I say, I totally believe they kind of, Romanians have tended to be fairly conservative in recent years, and then they pay us off the next night. This one, as I say, they kind of they racketed up their kind of their imagination the night before, and I think the night after it was, it seemed like a tired show.
The reservoir was a little dry.
Yeah, it seemed like a tired show. We've got a limited crowd. No real problem with like Taker and Bray not being on there. If one isn't, why not? You can't have everything on every show, and if you do, if stuff gets forgotten, if surely one of the big lessons people have realised of NXT is you don't have guys on every show, it's not a bad thing. When you've got 1 hour, I suppose it's a lot easier to do. So that wasn't necessarily a negative for me, but the emphasis, like, why didn't we? I suppose we started with Brock, didn't we? But we didn't get a Rollins promo, so like,
yeah, I hate
slapped
that
in the middle. It's like, no, the world championship, he should be the first one.
He should have started the show.
Yeah, you could have done, fuck, if he goes four.
Lesnar arrives in the building.
Yeah, you do. I just wouldn't. That is a bad sign of things to come in terms of Seth. And I think, as I say, Seth's going to be used how Seth has been used.
Yeah.
The occasional reference how good he is when he has a good match. I think, yeah, rather than being this to start something with Seth, I think it's a transitional thing to Reigns. I really believe that.
Okay, well, again, just in terms of like my kind of wrapped up thoughts on Raw, the reason why I think that this one fell a little more flat than the previous ones, the post-Mania Raws that I love, especially like even like Mania 14, the post-Mania 14 Raw is one of my all-time favourites. It's when it sets in motion the things we're going to get going forward. And I think that was like, you know, that's more than surprises and unnecessary, you know, shock appearances. It's kind of what I'm conditioned to looking for now, because that's what they've done for the last couple of years. It is, okay, the direction, for, you know, whether it was the Shield babyface turn last year and all that stuff, the direction we're getting is established on this show, and the direction we're getting is Lesnar's not going to be here, and Big Show and Kane heavily featured with Roman Reigns struggling, and Seth is kind of this secondary, like you said, maybe a transitional champion, if not in execution, in certainly in perception, is what I'm afraid of. So again, a very, very deflating thing in terms of overall. You know, we've kind of run the gamut now of WrestleMania and Raw the night after. Final closing thoughts in terms of, you know, overall takeaways from this final week. We were so unenthused 1 week ago, and then in the final build up things just turned around. Awesome show the night after Raw. It left mixed impressions on people. I'm curious, you know, summarize, what do you think?
I say, not including their Raw, but from the Lesnar re-signing onwards, it was, you know, really got my interest peaked that last week, and the show delivered. One thing I would say, we hinted at it, putting the Battle Royal and the tag match on the pre-show, they should get a bit of credit for actually booking and timing out a show right for once, because
yeah, I think they did that really well.
Don't think, obviously they went right up to the end of the pay-per-view time, but no match felt like it needed more time, so that's a massive bonus, and that's with the 25-minute Rock segment.
I could do without that concert, though. I will say that. Yeah. They do that every year, and I never like it.
Yeah, but I get why they do it. And I went out for a cigarette, and that was on anyway. It's not. It's weird how to explain it, it's making it seem completely a futile point. There is a prestige to having an act like that on WrestleMania, even if it sucks. There's a benefit on the importance it puts on the show itself, because you don't get that all the time. And so for once a year, one time a year, for 5 minutes, whatever, I have no real problem with it. Plus it's a cigarette break for me. I mean, I'd like to think, I hope they've kind of learned a lesson from Brock that you don't have to have like the champion wrestling every week, but you know Seth's not the champion to not wrestle, he's the champ. And I get that as well, but I think just, you know, make him, give him a bit of, or then have him
stick him in a suit, make him a star.
Yeah, just, and they obviously, I mean, although I say, you know, I think he'll be transitional to Reigns, they do obviously like him, because, and maybe they see him as a face going forward, because they've had him on a few talk shows and things, so he looks good in a suit himself. You know, he scrubs up nice, talks well, so I could see whether he's got the, like, the long term appeal as a face to be doing that. I'm not sure, but I think but I just feel the big picture is still Reigns, so yeah. We'll see how we get there.
In terms of everything, re-signing Brock was so key for this company right now.
I agree.
That I would probably wouldn't feel quite so happier post-Mania if Brock was leaving, or if Brock had left. Saying that, though, it's that weird thing of like it's trying to balance between like getting too much of a good thing and at the same time saying like they really do need more Brock. You know, 6 pay-per-views out of him a year, something like that, then it'll be fucking worth it. Because just
I think that's perfect amount for him. 6 is so once every 2 months.
Yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Perfect. Use
absolutely,
for
yeah. He admits him. He admits himself on that. I don't know what sports channel it was. He admitted himself that he's pretty much getting broken down.
Don't believe a fucking word he said in that, for God's sake. And this goes out to you, Dave Meltzer. It was a fucking work by Lesnar. So don't get your panties in a twist over the verbatim words that he said. God damn it, that pissed me off. Like, this is going on next week's podcast.
Go on, pet peeves.
Pet peeves, yeah. People fucking taking works as shoots and taking...
Taking public appearances as real news as opposed to face value.
He works Sports Center to get on there in the first place. Why would you consider anything he says with literal importance? That's kind of wacky.
It's public appearances is what it is.
Come on. Everything he said was completely catered for the situation for the singer.
And it's like the agonising both ways.
Yeah. He was, come on, he was never going back to UFC, ever.
He did 2 months of training.
Fuck. Says who?
Says
Brock Lesnar on that show. Fucking hell. Don't buy it. Don't buy it for a second.
It's just right behind it's just right behind the Shawn Michaels conspiracy back theory.
Yes,
thing.
It is.
Oh, that's a show. Conspiracy theories.
Conspiracy theories.
That's a show we need to do.
Kieran's Conspiracy Corners. KKK.
Yeah.
yeah, okay. All right. So Brock Lesnar, we're supposed to believe he uses the UFC, sits next to Dana White on the Ronda Rousey show, and he's using them to... The only thing he would do would be using them to re-sign Vince and, you know, obviously establish his value, because if he can't get to UFC, his value at $5 million a year drops, because that's, you know, equivalent to what he's going to get in UFC, or in theory could get. So if he's hasn't got that option, then they're not going to pay him that. You're looking at half that at best. Okay, yeah, so you see, sit there next to fucking Dana, and then Dana just allows Ronda to participate in Mania and probably do a match. They're all in on it. It's a work from the start. It's beneficial to both companies. So don't fucking tell me otherwise. Fucking workers.
Either way,
moving on to the original point.
Either way, we've got Brock, and thank goodness. So we're just gonna have to wait till we get his greatness. Rollins, I hope they find the way with him, but yeah, probably history dictates they won't. Reigns, give a shit until he changes. As I told you, until he changes that fucking look. Until he tells me what his character is. Besides,
you're a stickler for this, aren't you?
And I'm gesturing his little fist pump rank thing he does, right? Unless he tells me what that's fucking about. What are you? Who are you? What?
Who is Roman?
Who the fuck are you? I don't know who you are. I won't give a shit about him.
God, I'm full of them now. For the network, because they need new shows. Roman with Reigns, and basically just follows him around his hometown.
For God's sake!
Yeah,
it's come to this.
That one's on me, boys.
I'm intrigued to see what they do with the secondary titles. You know, with Cena and Bryan controlling those. So see exactly how long that lasts before they get bored of that. And they don't fuck up Rusev.
That's your main one.
Just give me more Brock, and don't fuck up Rusev. That's kind of it, because I wouldn't mind a Rusev for Brock if they build Rusev up again with another undefeated streak for a while. You know, I wouldn't mind that at all. But it's gonna suck. It's gonna suck until Brock comes back. And when Brock leaves again, it's gonna suck again, because they won't make the necessary changes. Yeah. So until then, who gives a shit? Because I'll just watch NXT.
They've got their TV show habit from Monday Night Raw, and that's a habit that is very, very tough to break. Unfortunately,
would be remiss to say before we go. That RKO was fucking sweet.
It was, actually. Yeah. The fact that we've gone this long without praising the RKO, that did deserve to be put over. That's, I want to thank everybody for listening this far. And next week's episode, we have one that we are looking forward to very, very much. It's going to be a very interactive show, and we want your feedback, because we're going to be talking about your wrestling pet peeves. peeves, irrational hatreds, if you will, wrestlers you don't like, matches you don't like, things about the business that you don't like, whether it's pay-per-views, what gets on your nerves, what really grinds your gears, what grates your cheese, what waxes your ass. That's what we want to know, and if you want to get yours read guaranteed, send them over to scgradio@hotmail.com. I'll be posting this question on the message boards, obviously, but if you send it to that, I will make sure it gets read on the show, scgradio@hotmail.com. Very much looking forward to that. Next week, we'll have the full roundtable back for G. John Chase.
I thought Ronda looked sexy.
For Kieran O'Rourke.
I thought a rock looked sexy.
Hang on, I've killed my gimmick there.
Yeah, you must go to the gym.
I'm leaving my rock and get out of here!